Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. June is Pride Month, a time for people around the world to celebrate the LGBTQ community. But there are still many stories that haven't yet been told. Local author Bryce Smith tells one such story of a pioneer transgender activist in his new book, Lou Sullivan, Daring to Be a Man Among Men.
Lou Sullivan was born Sheila Jean Sullivan in 1951 in the Milwaukee area and grew up in Wauwatosa. Lou realized early in his life that he was attracted to men but not comfortable with his gender identity as a girl.
Sullivan moved to San Francisco in 1975 and began to pursue female-to-male transitioning. A gay trans man was neither widely known nor accepted at the time, and because of that, it took Sullivan years to transition. Once he did, he dedicated his life to teaching both the medical profession and the public about gay trans people and the relationship or lack thereof between gender identity and sexual orientation.
Sullivan was diagnosed with AIDS in 1986 and lived with the disease until his death in 1991. Author Bryce Smith explains to Audrey Nowakowski how he came to learn about Sullivan and what prompted the biography.
It was back in 2004, and I was finishing up my master's degree, and I needed to take an elective, so I took my first history course in gender and American history, and you know, I decided, well, okay, why don't I look at trans people? And I went into the UWM library, and there was only like 3 feet of bookshelf space having to do with trans people in any capacity. And it seemed like fully a third of those books all referenced Lou Sullivan. And as I was reading through, you know, just these snippets of information, you know, his story just had such a visceral effect on me. And I felt like I just couldn't find enough information about the guy. And I was, you know, bothered by the fact that his biography didn't exist, because he had obviously been such an inspirational and transformational figure in history. And I was just so frustrated that his biography didn't exist. So I figured, well, okay, then I guess I just need to write it. So I enrolled in UWM's brand new PhD history program to get the tools to be able to write a biography worthy of this great guy. And you know, at the time, I was identifying as genderqueer. And I think in part maybe the reason why I took on this history project, you know, for the class, just to do something on trans history, was just to better understand what it means to be trans. And it was through my work in writing, in researching Lou and in writing his biography, that I came to better understand my identity as a trans man and to find the courage to transition myself. And you know, I figured, you know, if he could help me to do that, I had no doubt that his story could continue to help others do the same, even though it's been 25 years since he died.
The fact that he stayed so consistent to who he was and trying to figure it out, and he was constantly fighting for that recognition, and as you mentioned, to distinguish gender identity from sexuality. Can you go into a bit of a detail on how the gender professionals at the time served really as an obstacle, despite the fact that this was really the time when trans surgeries were really starting to happen and it was a recognized surgery and diagnosis, but despite that, Lou had such difficulty?
Yeah, and it's such a fascinating moment in time, too. I think it could be easy to just paint with a broad stroke and say, oh, the gender professionals stunk, they didn't get it. But it was so much more complex and nuanced than that. In the late 1960s, I believe in 1968, that was when the first gender program or gender clinic that was affiliated with a university opened up. And that ushered in this era of about 15 years where the primary means for folks to access services to transition was through these university-based gender programs. The reason why they started opening up these gender programs is because the gender professionals, as they were called at the time, they cared about trans patients. And there were so many horror stories about just terrible experiences that the trans people had at the hands of doctors and surgeons who didn't have the qualifications to be treating them. So they were trying to provide, you know, professional legitimacy to the treatment of trans people. So they opened up the gender clinics, and they were seen as pretty radical by their colleagues. But they were pioneers in their profession, and I believe they were coming from a good place, but their execution could leave something lacking. They quickly found that there were far more people applying to the programs than they could actually assist. And so they were able to establish criteria as to who they would accept into their program and who they wouldn't. And they really wanted to be seen as professionals, and they were afraid of failure. You know, they also wanted to do their best to ensure that whomever transitioned would not regret it later. So they put in place, you know, very strict criteria. They were just trying to produce cookie cutter men and women. So add to that, you know, along comes Lou Sullivan, you know, applying to their program saying, I want to transition because I am a gay man. From their perspective, they probably thought, well, why would you possibly want to go through all of this to be with men when you can be with men now? You know, why put yourself through that? And what they had a hard time realizing is that it's so different to be a man among men and with men than to be a woman with men. And they told him no, but he was able to find a surgeon and an endocrinologist in private practice who are willing to help him. As I was mentioning, you know, as they were working on the you know, professional legitimacy of diagnosing and treating transsexualism, which was, you know, the primary term at the time. Another thing that they did in addition to establishing these university-based gender programs was they started up a professional organization called the Harry Benjamin International Gender Dysphoria Association. And one of the things that they produced was standards of care, trying to help get everybody on the same page as to how they were treating their trans patients. But in implementing that, then it enabled surgeons and therapists who are not part of the gender programs to treat and assist trans people. And yeah, I don't know that that was necessarily their intention, but it certainly served people like Lou well. And, you know, the thing too about the trans community and information sharing too was that, you know, folks would share their experiences with each other, you know, whether they're meeting in groups or in letters or newsletters or phone or what have you. So they knew, even though these gender programs did not explicitly say, we will not accept anyone who identifies as gay, all of the trans folks knew that because they knew so many people who had applied and been turned down. So instead, what many folks would do would be to tell the gender professionals exactly what they wanted to hear so that they could access these services. So they would tell them that they identified as straight. You know, the downside to that is then, you know, there weren't the numbers of people, you know, who are saying that they identified as gay and lesbian, you know, to further the cause. But, you know, you can also understand where they're coming from. You know, for a lot of trans folks, you know, it's a matter of life and death with transitioning because, you know, for so many folks, you know, the idea of continuing to live in a body that is not home is just too much. So, yeah.
Well, and Lou was really the first person to set the record and to educate these professionals. And his writing and research, as well as the books that others wrote about him or reference him in that followed, were able to serve primarily as a FTM or female-to-male guide. But what purpose did you want your book to fulfill?
Sure. I wanted people to be able to, I wanted people to care enough about this particular individual that they would open themselves up to learning about what it means to be trans, what it can feel like to identify as gay too, and to be inspired by his story, you know, and to get to experience history through his very, very unique perspective. because he did experience so many fascinating things in the 20th century. But the main thing is, in learning about Lou Sullivan, to learn a little bit about ourselves, you know, regardless of how we identify, and to think more about what it means to be who we are and to have the courage to be who we are. And beyond that, you know, to be so willing to take the trials that we may have experienced in life and to use those experiences to help others. You know, he was the unlikeliest of activists, if you just look at the guy. You know, he was born, you know, in Milwaukee, you know, the third kid of six in a Catholic home. And, you know, he was a pretty quiet, unassuming guy, not alpha in the least, you know, not very outspoken. You know, he was very, very intelligent, but, you know, not someone who you would just look at and say, yeah, that's a natural leader. You know, it was more so that he was just driven by his experiences and his desire to make things better for others, you know, and just doing so through the very, you know, enriching and meaningful, but also, you know, hard work of one-on-one relationships. And it was just so much of letting people know that they were not alone and connecting them with others. And this was before the internet, so it was a lot harder to connect back then. You know, it's so much easier for trans people now to connect and to get any information that they need. And, you know, but back then it was much harder, and he worked hard to connect folks.
Why do you think Lou Sullivan's story has been largely missing from LGBT history or just widespread history, despite all of his efforts to retain a legacy?
That's a great question. Well, trans history is kind of new, even though we've been around forever. You know, there just hasn't been much work done on trans history. And also, I think it was missing from the broader LGBTQ historical narrative because folks did see this just as trans history. You know, that I feel like folks have had a hard time seeing, you know, the intersections. You know, you cannot understand Lou's story if you leave out the gay piece at all. You know, and I often wonder, would he have become an activist had he not been gay? Because it may have been easier for him to transition, and then maybe he wouldn't have, you know, felt compelled to work on behalf of all trans people had he not had the challenges that he had. And I don't know, selfishly, I'm glad his biography hadn't been written yet, because now I've been able to, and, you know, just the profound impact that working on this has had on my life. You know, it's been such a big part of my life for so many years, and I've gotten to meet so many incredible people, you know, those who knew him, you know, the people who've found his story inspirational too. I mean, it's just amazing how he lives on. Not only through those who knew him, but now through subsequent generations too, of folks who are wanting to go back and understand our history. And, you know, it's so helpful to have history, because, you know, we can always draw courage and inspiration from those who came before us. And even though it may not always feel like it, we are making progress. And to be able to look back at how our ancestors, you know, overcame adversity and how they had the courage to still be who they were and to work for greater change in this world. You know, it's so wonderful to be able to do that.
One thing that many people may not understand completely is the sense of anguish that Lou and other trans people face when they're forced to live in a way that doesn't physically express who they believe they are. And, you know, his journal entries just so clearly depict that through the years and the struggles. Yet at the end, it was so worth it to him, even though he died far too young, but to be able to live wholly for those last few years was the ultimate goal that he had. Yeah. So what do you want trans people to take away from your book? And in turn, what is a key takeaway you want people who aren't trans to learn from Lou Sullivan's story?
Sure. So for trans folks, I think I just want them to be more aware of our history and to draw inspiration from Lou's experiences and the work that he did. For non-trans people, you know, I want to to provide them, you know, a glimpse into what it is like for trans people. And also, you know, deeper than that, you know, I think ultimately this book is just about, you know, what it means to be human too, you know, and to live our lives as meaningfully as possible and to do our best to take the challenges that we face and turn those into fuel for helping improve things for others too, you know, as an impetus for change, that our challenges would be an impetus for change and change on behalf of the greater good.
Well, it's definitely a work well done, and I'd like to thank you, Bryce, for coming in and talking about it today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Milwaukee native Bryce Smith is author of Lou Sullivan, Daring to Be a Man Among Men. Smith will be attending a book reading and signing tomorrow at Outwards Books in Milwaukee. There is more information about the book and Lou Sullivan at WUWM.com.